Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and treat yourself to a glass of cool, refreshing Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry presents Information, Please. Test your wits against a quartet who seem to know almost, but not quite, everything. Here's how it's done. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. Now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, our unpremeditated, unrehearsed, and unrestrained Information Please wends its quizzical way along. Seated opposite me at a long table are 4 Information Pleasers, experts at the game of Q&A. Should they miss a question, Canada Dry is glad to pay out $10. Folks, that's a new cash register contributed by the National Cash Register Company. We'll see how soon we can make it sound old. Well, $10 goes out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question itself. Our 2 tried and true anchor men are on hand tonight. Franklin P. Adams, creator of the famous Conning Tower column of the New York Post, and John Curran, renowned authority on bugs, bees, books, birds, and batting averages. They will be aided and abetted by Marcus Duffield, day news editor of the Herald Tribune, and lending us her charm and grace this evening, one who needs no introduction, Miss Lillian Gish. We're off. Now, Miss Gish and gentlemen, you know on what program you are at the present moment, do you not? And you know who our sponsor is? Canada Dry, may I say, confidentially. And you know who our announcer is? Mr. Milton Cross. And you've been listening to him for some time. I'm going to ask you, or rather Mr. Wolf, Harry Wolf of New York City, asks you to give the exact wording used by Mr. Milton Cross at the beginning of this program, up to the crowing of the rooster. Very short and simple announcement. Very simple. Miss Gish, I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't know it. Mr. Duffield, you might not know it. But Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams are looking at each other in a combination of ire and bewilderment. Haven't the slightest idea.
Can't we get Mr. Cross on the board for a minute?
I wonder whether... I don't know. I suppose Mr. Cross could give that again. Mr. Cross, let's have it. What are the words?
Before information, the please.
That's right.
Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages.
Very good, Mr. Cross.
Comes like a bolt to me. I don't remember.
Time to the rest of you gentlemen, listen only to yourselves. That means that Mr. Wolf, for a very clever question, is going to get $10 plus $5 for the question itself. Now will you remember? The next question, coming from Mr. David Lum of the Choate School at Wallingford, Connecticut, has to do with literary works. He wants you to name 4 literary works whose titles consist entirely of initials. This is not too easy. Mr. Adams?
R-U-R.
R-U-R. What does it stand for? Who wrote it? What is it?
Carol Capek.
Yes, Carol Capek, and it stands for Rossum's Universal Robots. It's about mechanical men, isn't it? That's very good, Mr. Adams. Have another one. Miss Gish.
RFD.
RFD, standing for...
Rural Free Delivery.
Very good, Miss Gish. And who wrote it and what is it?
It's a book, I think, on American farm life.
Quite right.
By Smart.
That's quite right, and a very good book it is, too. RFD, that gives us 2. We have to get 2 more literary works whose titles consist entirely of initials, or it may be consist of a single letter. Mr. Adams.
M.
I beg your pardon.
M.
Who wrote it?
Dr. Merrill Moore, 1,000 Sonnets.
1,000 Sonnets. Well, did he sign himself M, or is the title
No,
of the
book title
M?
Of the book is M.
Oh, M stands for 1,000, doesn't it, in Roman letters. That's quite right, and a very clever response. Miss Gitch.
The Life of the Bee.
that's almost all initials, but not quite, Miss Gitch.
A.B.'s Irish
Whip. A.B.'s Irish Whip. Miss Gish, this is the sort of thing that Mr. Adams generally does. Still, we're glad to have this sort of competition.
Initial?
I'll give you... do you want that sort of thing? I'll give you
initial?
One back, Miss Gish. How about the famous poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow? X-L-C-R. Excelsior. There's
I'm sorry.
That's a good one. Have to get one more. One more.
If you won't ask me the author, I will suggest RSVP.
I would ask you the author. Have you ever read the book?
No, I haven't read a book either.
No. There should be a book by that name.
Yes.
I know, but I don't think
there's an opportunity there.
There is an opportunity, Mr. Duffield, but I'm afraid it never was written. Miss Gish, do you have another one? No jokes.
Tater. No, Rembrandt.
Ah, go ahead. Go ahead now.
By Van Loon.
By Van Loon. And what's the title of the book? Yeah, that's right.
R.
Yep.
V.
Yep.
R.
Good. All right. That's four. The gentleman, Miss Gish, makes you all look, what shall I say? I think you should be humiliated. You are humiliated. Very good. Four out of four. Practically all contributed by Miss Gish. The next question from Mel Abbott of Duluth, Minnesota, has to do with motion pictures in the old silent days. In which silent motion picture do the following famous scenes occur? I believe they're famous. In the first one, a miner, driven crazy by hunger, imagines his companion as a giant rooster. Wake up, America. Time to stump the expert. A miner, driven crazy by hunger, imagines his companion as a giant rooster. Miss Gish?
Chapman.
Right.
The Gold Rush.
Very good. Why, Mr. Adams, your picture.
I know that. It's the one I saw.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm surprised you let Miss Gish beat you to it. That's quite right. In the second, the situation is this. An English woman is kidnapped and falls in love with her kidnapper.
Oh, I know that.
Ah, Miss Gish, you know
oh,
that.
Oh, yes, that's Valentina.
That's Valentina. What was the name of the picture?
The Sheik.
Yes. Miss Gish, to what do you ascribe the popularity of that picture and the novel from which it's made? Do you have any theories about it?
The man.
I mean Valentine. Makes it all very simple. In the third situation, the heroine expresses her love by kissing a bedpost. It's a variation on the old game of post office. Miss Gish, did you
That's
have the
me.
Answer? Do you mind if I pry into your private life and ask you in what picture?
That was in The Birth of a Nation.
In The Birth of a Nation. And why, may I ask, he said sternly, did you kiss the bedpost?
Well, we weren't allowed to kiss a man in pictures then.
Really?
It just wasn't done.
How things have improved since then.
And if you had a love scene, you had to just kiss something.
Just
whatever was around the bedpost, or even a cow, or the pump, or
anything,
anything there at hand, but you weren't, no one ever was asked to kiss another person.
I think people were happier in those days.
Very probably. But I wonder whether Miss Gish was, Mr. Adams. Thank you. That's three out of three. The next question, coming from Mr. H. Morris of the Bronx, New York. How do the following names figure in the recent news? And there are four of them. I'm going to ask you to get three out of four, if you can. The first name is J. M. Smith, a very common name. Mr. Duffield.
Dr. James Monroe Smith is charged with having borrowed some money without having told Louisiana State University that he borrowed it.
Yes, that's quite right. He was only following Mr. Long's dictum, I suppose, of share the wealth. Or wouldn't
yes,
you say
that's
that?
Right.
No. Yes. The next is S. Cato or Cato, K-A-T-O. Mr. Duffield had his hand up again.
Mr. Cato or Cato is
Well, I thought you'd know, Mr. Duffield.
Well, I'm just taking your word for it, is the Japanese who was going to negotiate with the British about what to do about Tintin.
Yes. What are they fighting about in Tintin?
Fighting about whether the Japanese ought to blockade the British concession there and strip the Britons as they go in and out.
That's what it's about. And the next one is R.O.D. Sullivan. R.O.D. Sullivan. Mr. Duffield again.
Captain Sullivan is the captain of one of the clippers. I think it's the Yankee clipper, but it might be the...
That's a bit of local pride on your part, I think, Mr. Duffield. Mr. Adams, is the Yankee clipper?
Dixie.
Yes, the Dixie clipper. Dixie. Please be fair. The Dixie Clipper, yes. Thanks for the sound effects, courtesy of Mr. Franklin P. Adams. Mr. Duffield, he is captain of the Dixie Clipper, which made its first commercial passenger plane flight to Europe, of course, last week. And fourth and last, A. Heuser, H-E-U-S-E-R, Mr. Curran.
He was knocked flat by Mr. Max Schmeling in about a minute or so.
Where was it?
It was a heavyweight championship fight, a German heavyweight championship fight. I forgot whether it was in Berlin or Hamburg.
Yes,
or
it was in Berlin. You remember Mr. Heuser's first name?
Not offhand, and I don't think it's important.
No, it probably isn't important. For some reason or other, it just sticks with him, Mr. Kieran. His first name is Adolf. The next question comes from Mrs. G.G. Crawford of Strasburg, Virginia. Very funny little question. Name an instance in which the thumb, has played a part in each of the following fields. For example, if I should ask you to tell me how it's played a part in the field of transportation, you would say that it's the hitchhiker's sign, wouldn't you, Mr. Kieran? Now, how has it played a part in history? Not with reference to any particular event that you could date, but generally. Mr. Duffield had his hand up first.
Well, it was a celebrated act of rejection in the Roman gladiatorial ring.
Yeah, what did it mean?
Thumbs down,
thumbs
kill
down.
Him. Kill him.
Yes, thumbs were down, kill him. And, of course, the reverse gesture gave Mr. Hemingway the inspiration for his book, The Thumb Also Rises. You know that, Mr. Duffield. So much for history. Now for literature, or legend, if you will. Miss Gish?
Shakespeare uses it to start fights.
What play?
Romeo and Juliet. He bites the thumb and then...
That's right. It's a gesture of insult, isn't
yes.
it? Used by one of the retainers, either a Montague or a Capulet, to infuriate either a Capulet or a Montague.
Yes, or to get characters off the stage.
Yes,
get them
on.
When they do
off.
That, they get chased.
That's the main business of the drama. That's quite right. Act one consists almost entirely in getting the characters on and off the stage, as I remember. How is the thumb used in the dance, the field of the modern dance? I think you'd call it a dance.
Yes.
Miss Gish, do you have an inspiration?
The new dance from England, the Lambeth Walk.
Yes, how do they use the thumb in the Lambeth Walk?
It's part of the dance.
Yes, it's at the end, isn't it, of a particular pirouette.
I think so.
The thumb is cast, as it were, over the left or right shoulder, and they say oi. I don't know why they say oi. Now, how does the thumb come into the field of law? Mr. Adams?
With a thumbprint.
Yes, that would be quite right. I think there's a more specific application than that. We've got 3 out of 4. We're quite all right, Mr. Adams. That'll do.
I know
Mr.
that.
Mr. Duffield?
You can't beat your wife with a stick bigger than your thumb.
That's quite right. Well, I prefer to put it another way, Mr. Duffield, that you can beat your wife with a stick smaller than your thumb.
That's more cheerful, yes.
Yes, it's a much nicer way of looking at it.
What do you use on the husband?
Oh, they're always right.
They always have the advantage, Miss Gish. You remember. You remember Mr. Valentino in that picture that you were talking to us about? Well, let's see. A hurried conference with a statistician reveals that Canada Dry's loss up to this point is a cool 10 spot. And here's Milton Cross with a word about cool Canada Dry.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. According to an ancient custom, July is following June again this year. And as they say in the crime movies, the heat is on. And since heat is always followed by thirst, those tall glasses with the clinking chunks of ice are headed for a real summer workout. One additional ingredient is necessary to this cool picture. A fine club soda. Sparkling Canada Dry water supplies that demand, for it blends perfectly with your drink, at the same time giving it a more delicious, a finer, subtle flavor. In the making of Canada Dry water, an interesting process is employed. An exclusive Canada Dry process known as pinpoint carbonation. During this step, millions of tiny bubbles appear in the water, giving it almost incredible animation and effervescence. It's these countless dancing bubbles that keep Canada Dry water lively and sparkling even 24 hours after the bottle has been opened. There are many club sodas on the market today, but none as popular as Canada Dry water. So be prepared for July's mounting thermometer. Next time you order club soda, insist upon sparkling Canada Dry water.
Sounds like a nice drink.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Cross, your words were stopwatched in a cool 66 seconds. Mr. Adams in 3/4 of a second. The next question from Miss Ruth Haar of Oak Park, Illinois, is timely in a sense. This is Independence Day. We think of martial music today. Here is a question about drums. Where does each of the following quotations about drums come from?
The first is Boom Lay Boom Lay Boom Lay Boom. Mr. Adams.
Rachel Lindsay.
Yes, what poem?
The Congo.
The Congo, that's right. It's the chorus. It's the line that ends, I think, each separate stanza of the famous poem, The Congo, by Rachel Lindsay. The second. For the rum-tum-tum of the military drum and the drums that go boom-boom. Mr. Adams again. Bring it on drums.
I think that's from The Gondoliers.
Pick another. Your authors are correct, Gilbert and Sullivan, but not from The Gondoliers. I don't believe. The way Mr. Adams looks at me, I'm beginning to lose faith in myself. Maybe The Gondoliers. I think it's Princess Ida. Do you mind if I give you 62.5% credit on that, Mr. Adams?
There's something about a drum in The Gondoliers.
Maybe, Mr. Adams, but I don't think it's for the rum-tum-tum and so forth. The next is the hardest of the four, I think. Bang, whang, whang goes the drum. And by the way, I never heard a drum that went bang, whang, whang. Tootle-tee-tootle, the fife. Wake any response in the mind of any of you? No response in the mind of any of you? Even Miss Gish seems puzzled.
Oh.
I'm sorry, Miss Gish. Did you?
I just have it, but I can't think what it is.
Yes, I know exactly how you feel.
Oh.
The answer is it's from a not very well-known poem by Robert Browning called Up at the Villa, Down at the City. And I wouldn't blame any of you for not knowing it. Like the tick-tick-tock of the stately clock as it stands against the wall, like the beat-beat-beat of the tom-tom. Miss Gish?
I know that. That's Cole Porter.
Yes, Cole Porter. What song?
Night and Day.
Night and Day is quite right. I think I'm going to be very strict and call The Gondoliers wrong, Mr. Adams, so that we got only 2 out of 4. $10, therefore, goes out to Miss Ruth R. of Oak Park, plus $5 for the use of the question. The next one from Mr. L. Porter of Queens, New York, has to do with the current political situation, namely the situation in Danzig. In connection with Danzig, which political leaders have recently made the following statements? The first statement is this. The Baltic seacoast, Pomorza, and our two ports, Dynia and Danzig, are the air and sun of our national life and the basis of our political and economic independence. Mr. Duffield, who said that?
That was said by President Moskicki of Poland, whose first name sounds like Ignatz, but I can't believe it.
Yes, Ignatz is quite correct.
Right?
It still is Ignatz. President Ignatz Moskicki, or Moskicki, perhaps, of Poland. Quite right. The second quotation. We are in a period of danger, more acute and more laden with ugly facts than any which we have known in the hard, disturbed period through which we have lived our lives. Mr. Duffield again.
That was Premier Daladier.
Awfully sorry.
Really?
He said something very much like that.
That's right. He said this was the worst time in 20 years, and you're making it the whole life.
Yes. Who would have said this?
That sounds more like the Nazi side of the bar.
No, sorry. I think the one who said it would be rather irate if he heard you say that. It's Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill, who I understand may be a member of the British cabinet soon. Pressure is being brought to bear to admit him. That's one wrong. You have to get 3 out of 4. In the event of further aggression, this is the next one, we are resolved to use at once the whole of our strength in fulfillment of our pledges to resist it. Mr. Duffield.
That was the British, Viscount Halifax.
Viscount Lord Halifax, yes, a rather firm and definite statement, wouldn't you say, Mr. Duffield?
Sounds good, but there's a loophole in it.
Well, we may find there will be a loophole. If the loophole means peace, let's hope there is a loophole. English threats do not impress us anymore. English threats do not impress us anymore. Now, Mr. Duffield.
That sounds like Herr Goebbels.
It is Propaganda Minister Goebbels. That gives us 3 out of 4. Thank you, Mr. Duffield. And Mr. Duffield, off the record, no one's listening to this. Do you think the Danzig situation is going to bring about a war this summer?
No,
hastily.
I do not think so, Mr. Fadiman.
Any particular reason for it?
I have an idea that a little more appeasement is in order and is coming before Mr. Chamberlain folds up his umbrella. My guess is they're going to make a deal, something like this, that Danzig is going to declare its own attachment to Germany in a peaceful way.
Freely and voluntarily.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then Germany, in return, will guarantee Poland to keep its economic rights in Danzig, in the port, and also promise to be good and not gobble up the Polish corridor. I don't say they'll keep these promises, but they'll promise them.
Yes.
Then Britain will probably keep the Poles happy by giving them a big, fat loan.
Yeah, that
crisis
sounds like
will be
an
over,
idea.
And then we can sit and wait for the next crisis.
You think we're going to have peace then, at least through the summer?
I think so.
Well, maybe it's the best we can do under the circumstances, Mr. Duffield. Thanks very much. The next question from Mr. F. Hines of Los Angeles, California, has to do with birds. How are the following birds usefully employed by man? There are three birds listed. We have to get all three. The first is the falcon. Mr. Kieran?
It's used for hunting.
How?
Why, it's carried hooded on the wrist of the falconer and taken out into the hunting field, and when the game is sighted, the falcon is unhooded, tossed aloft, and it flies down, strikes the prey, and the hunter comes up and gets it.
Do you ever cover that sport as a sports expert, Mr. Kieran?
I've seen it done. I've never covered it, no.
Is it really done today? I thought it was
yes.
The 13th or 14th
no,
century
No, it's done
sport.
Right out around Westchester right now.
Right? Really?
Yes.
Odd people. The canary. The canary is used usefully. How? Mr. Kieran?
Well, just to cheer up, brighten up the corner where it is.
To sing.
I hadn't quite meant that. That would be true of many other birds. Mr. Kieran?
It's used to detect damp in a coal mine. That is a gas that affects the laborers, the miners.
Yes.
It's carried down there, and if the canary faints, then it's time to get out of there.
Yes, you put it very nicely. I'm afraid the canary is usually asphyxiated.
Not a good, strong, healthy canary. The one you're talking about must have been sick.
Not one of those canaries.
Canary that lives 120 years, I suppose.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Adams. The third bird, the cormorant. Mr. Kira.
Cormorant is a fish-eating bird, and it's used by the Japanese to catch fish, and they slip a silver collar, not necessarily a silver copper, probably these days they're down to brass, around its neck so that they can't swallow the fish. So
that's
they turn it loose, and when it gets the fish, it has a nice long neck, you know. You just go up and take the fish out of its neck.
Yeah, very, very convenient. Mr. Duffield, you say that's used by the Japanese?
Japanese.
Used by the Japanese. It occurs to me that Japan is very much in the situation of a cormorant now. It's got the Chinese fish in its bill, but...
That's a very bright simile, Mr.
You can use that in your column tomorrow. Can't seem to swallow it is right. That's three out of three. The next question from Mr. S. Lawrence of Chicago has to do with Shakespeare, Mr. Adams' old friend, one of his oldest friends. Quote the familiar lines from Shakespeare's plays which are spoken in each of the following situations. There are two. In the first situation, Juliet, on her balcony, is overheard by Romeo, who stands below. What does she say? Miss Gish had her hand up first.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name. Or if thou wilt not, be but sworn, my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet.
You're breaking my heart.
That was a Latin I had once.
the second question. In the second situation, Ophelia, in Hamlet, replies to her brother Laertes. Laertes is leaving to go away to travel, and he gives her some brotherly advice. And she answers him. And how does she answer him? Miss Gish again.
But good my brother, do not as some ungracious pastors do. Show me the steep and thorny way to heaven. Whilst, like a puffed and reckless libertine, himself the primrose path of dalliance treads, and recks not his own reed.
That's exactly right to the last comma.
Well, I played it.
Yes, of course. Very good. Honest Miss Gish. The next question from Miss P. Strauss of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, has to do with crimes. How do the following crimes differ from each other? Burglary, embezzlement, and robbery. I'm going to ask you to be pretty precise in telling me how these crimes may be distinguished. The first is burglary. Mr. Duffield had his hand up on that.
That involves breaking and entering. And stealing something.
Well, the act of housebreaking.
Yeah.
Do you have to steal something?
Well, I would. I would no use entering if you don't.
No, you merely have... If you can prove that the criminal, or the would-be criminal, had the intent to commit an unlawful act, he would still be guilty of burglary. But you have the essence of it, Mr. Duffield. Don't know how you picked up this information. The second is embezzlement. Mr. Kieran.
Embezzlement is putting to your own use funds that were entrusted to your care for some other specific purpose.
That's quite right. We had an example of embezzlement, or possible embezzlement, on this program just a moment ago. Mr. Smith. Not yet, however, convicted of embezzlement. Possibly never to be convicted of embezzlement. Three, robbery. Robbery is what? Word we constantly use. It has a very specific meaning. Robbery. than when you have to distinguish it from burglary, for example. Mr. Duffield, a prior
robbery has to be committed on a person and in the open.
Yes, that's right. On a person, taking from the person of another or in his presence any money or goods. And there's another thing that is involved in robbery, putting him in fear of menace of death or bodily injury. In other words, there has to be the element of threat in order to make robbery robbery.
Otherwise, he wouldn't give his watch up anyhow, I suppose.
Yes, otherwise, it's merely an international situation, Mr. Duffield. the next question comes from Walter Hartman in New York City. Very simple question, distinguishing the following words. Negus, rebus, and rhombus. What's a negus? Miss Gish, negus?
The king of Albania was negus.
Not the king of Albania.
Ethiopia.
Ethiopia. Yes, the former king of Ethiopia was called the negus. Mr. Kieran?
It's also a drink.
Also a drink. What kind?
Oh, it's a rum drink used in England in the old days.
Yes, or you often made with port wine, I think, lemon and so forth. What's a rebus? A rebus. Mr. Adams?
A verbal riddle.
A verbal riddle is quite correct, in which you use pictures or other hieroglyphics to indicate what the puzzle would be. Rhombus. Mr. Adams?
A geometrical figure.
What kind? That's good enough. Well, it's Mr. Kieran.
Four-sided, but the sides are not parallel.
They are parallel. It's an equilateral parallelogram with oblique angle. Rhombus is also, of course, worn by children in kindergarten. I think that's all we'll have time for this evening. Let's see. We announce a loss altogether of $20. Now a word from Mr. Cross, and then I'll tell you of next week's guest.
Out of curiosity, I asked a friend of mine the other day if he could give me a recipe to make ginger ale. He said, sure. You mix a ginger extract with other spices, add sugar and carbonated water. Well, that's possibly what a lot of people may think, but it's far removed from the truth, particularly far from the way Canada Dry is made. For Canada Dry uses an exclusive process for extracting all the rich flavor and delightful bouquet of choice Jamaica ginger. Then, especially selected essences from the four corners of the world and the purest sugar. Not only are the ingredients chosen with the utmost care, but laboratory tests are made to doubly ensure uniform quality. And after all ingredients are blended together according to a secret formula by graduate chemists, then perfectly carbonated water is added. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is the Canada Dry recipe and the reasons for its distinctive flavor. Little wonder that it has wholesome qualities and goodness unmatched by other ginger ales. That Canada Dry is famous throughout the world as the champagne of ginger ale.
Thank you. And Miss Gish and Mr. Duffield, Canada Dry extends thanks to you for joining in the fun this evening. The lineup for next week, 3 grizzled veterans, Franklin P. Adams, Oscar Levant, John Kieran, plus our guest of honor, Elliot Roosevelt, famous in his own right as a radio commentator and famous also as one of the energetic sons of the President of the United States. To all you listeners, we say, send your questions along. If you have a stumper, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another 10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win 15 in all. Send your letters with questions to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Among the host of Canada Dry beverages, you are bound to enjoy these summer favorites. Canada Dry Tom Collins Mixer and Canada Dry Lime Ricky. Both made with a genuine fruit base and the finest ingredients. No preservatives or artificial flavoring. So for cooling, tall drinks with a lemon flavor, order Canada Dry's Tom Collins Mixer. For a lime flavor, insist on Canada Dry Lime Ricky. The family size is economical, costing only 15 cents. This is Milton Cross saying, good night all.
This is the night.